On Point is a production of NPR and WBUR Boston. The program is made possible by your financial support. Please pledge online at WBUR.org.
From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Jane Clayson in for Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. Terry McAuliffe has had a front seat in American politics for the last quarter century. The former chairman of the Democratic National Committee is known as a legendary fundraiser with close ties to everyone from President Carter to Tip O'Neill to good pal Bill Clinton. He kickstarted his career in politics right out of college, wearing glasses to look older and wrestling an alligator to raise $15,000 for President Carter's reelection campaign. He overhauled the DNC to give the Democrats the tools they needed to go toe-to-toe with the Republicans in national elections, and he directed Hillary Clinton's bid for the Senate. Joining me now in the studio is Terry McAuliffe. His new book is What a Party, My Life Among Democrats, Presidents, Candidates, Donors, Activists, Alligators, and Other Wild Animals. Terry McAuliffe,
Jane,
it's nice
to be with you.
Have you here. Thank you.
You bet.
A lot of stories to get to from your book, but before we get to all that, Hillary Clinton. She says she's in. She's running for president. Are you going to run her campaign?
I'll serve as her chairman. Actually, we have a whole campaign team. Patty Cilise Doyle will be our campaign manager. But I've been very close to the Clintons for years, and this is an important race for us. So Hillary asked me, and I agreed that I'd chair the campaign.
What's her biggest obstacle, as you see it, that she faces in this race?
The biggest obstacle is to get people to know her. I think in New York State, where she just won an overwhelming landslide victory, she carried Republican counties because people got to know her and understood what a hard worker. They all knew how bright she was. So we need to do that on the retail level in Iowa, New Hampshire, and those early primary states. There's been millions, Jane, spent against this woman in a negative light. And now it's our turn to get out there. That's why the book is so important. You've never had a book where someone, best friend of a president and first lady, actually write about the inner workings and discussions and so forth. You read the book, you really understand who Hillary Clinton is.
So is part of this to lay the groundwork for her campaign?
Well, it's not why I decided to write the book. It's my 25 years in politics, 400 pages. But clearly, when you finish reading it, you'll have a clear understanding of what the Clintons are really like. They're my best friends. And I say in the beginning, I write this book, it's all positive on the Clintons because they're my best friends. And I write about it as you would write about your own best friends. And the second thing, it's my book, so I make myself look good. I'll do the other book later when I'm getting close to dying.
We'll talk more about that. And we'll talk more about Hillary and Bill Clinton a little later. But I'd like to ask you before we begin, if you could tell us how you feel about the Democratic Party. What's your general assessment of it right now?
I think we're in very good shape. We had great wins in 2006, winning the House, the Senate. We picked up 6 Democratic governors across the country, 10 state legislatures. So we're in very good shape. The main point I make in this party, and especially on presidential races, is we got to be tough. These Republicans play for keeps. Look what they did to John McCain. Look what they did to John Kerry. Look what they did to Al Gore. They'll go after anybody. And we Democrats got to understand, we don't go to a knife fight thinking we're going to a tea party. And I have I lay it all out. I think you'll laugh through most of the pages. But the serious part of this book is when you're running for president of the United States, this is a serious business, and millions of people are counting on us, and they want us to fight. Because if you don't fight for yourself, the American public doesn't think that you're going to fight for them.
You talk about the party fighting, but as you well know, there have been instances where the Democratic Party has seemed to be fractured. And you know better than anyone that besides Bill Clinton, there really hasn't been a voice or a real message that's emerged from the Democrats. Why do you think that is?
We are a very big tent party. And I say, Jane, you haven't lived till you've been chairman of the DNC for a day. I mean, we have lots of different opinions. But, you know, that diversity is also, you know, what makes our party exciting. I do think we came together in March of 2004 behind John Kerry. We all were more unified than this party had ever been. And we have a lot of people with a lot of different ideas, and I think that's good to have that debate. What I always try to say, though, is you got to come together at the end. We got to work together. I do say in the book, you know, we sometimes are a circular firing squad. We love to complain about one another. We love to attack one another. I always, as chairman, said, well, let's keep our fire where it should be on our opponents whom we're trying to beat. But sometimes our party's a bit raucous. But on the other hand, I sort of like it when it's raucous like that. It makes it exciting. We just shouldn't take our eye off the prize about winning.
Lose your focus.
You bet.
It's happened a lot.
It happens a lot. And, you know, there's been a lot of press on this book about what I say about the Kerry campaign. And listen, I say a lot of great things about the Kerry campaign. But I also say some very tough things. And I sat with John Kerry after the presidential election. He and I went out and had dinner, had some beers and a couple bottles of wine, and spent hours talking. And I said, John, here's what I want to put in the book. He didn't disagree with me at all on what I'd said in the book, but the idea that he didn't respond to the Swift boats, or they had $15 million in the bank at the end of the campaign, or that we couldn't attack George Bush at our convention, I'm sorry, that is political incompetence.
Does he know that you called the campaign incompetent, gutless, gun-shy, foolish?
Yes.
I guess it's fair to say you're glad he's not running now.
Well, listen, if you've watched me on TV over the course of the last few years, I am very blunt. I want people to say what they believe. I'm not into all this, you know, fine-tuning and trying to slice and dice and come up with it. We need, as a party, to go out there and say what we believe in. I want to see a politician that doesn't have a focus group or a pollster and just gets out and says what they believe and let the chips fall where they may.
And that's Hillary Clinton?
It is, and that's what you're going to see in the campaign. She's passionate about this, and I'm passionate about this. You know, Jane, I do this all for free. I leave five little kids at home. I haven't taken a paycheck in about 12 years. I'm lucky. Started my first business at 14, made money, and now I volunteer.
Let's talk about that. You've spent 28 years at the epicenter of the National Democrat Party. You started out, as you mentioned, at age 14 with the McAuliffe Driveway Maintenance Company.
That's right.
True?
My father said, Terry, I'd love to have you go to college. Couldn't afford it, so I figured I better get out there and pay for it.
Went on to get your law degree from Georgetown.
Mm-hmm.
And over the course of your career, started several companies.
About two dozen, right?
Mm-hmm. Banking, insurance, marketing, real estate. Your dad was a Democrat.
He was a Democrat. Actually, Jane, he was the county treasurer. I mean, they used to raise about $800 a year, but he was the county treasurer. He used to take me to fundraisers as a little kid. I met Lyndon Baines Johnson when I was about 8 years old and always loved politics.
And then at age 22, you started working on the Carter Mondale reelection campaign. What led you there?
I was going to law school. I'd only gone a couple days, and we lived in a group house, about 12 guys, and a buddy of mine by the name of Tom Donilon, who was actually working for Hamilton Jordan, came home one night. We're all sitting around having a couple beers, and he said, you know, we need help in the campaign. And I said, heck, I can always go to law school. So I left law school and went to work on the Carter Mondale reelection committee. Had never done it before. I ended up going to 45 states. I had raised so much money that I ended up being the finance director when I was 23 years old. So I can sell, and I love meeting people, and I love travel. And so it was just, you know, a match made in heaven, as they say.
Dick Gephardt's presidential campaign then brought you on, and you were national co-chair of Bill Clinton's reelection campaign.
That's right. You bet.
Chairman of the DNC from 2001 to 2005. Yep. What would you say is your most exciting moment from all of that?
I do talk about one moment after we won the reelection. As you talk about in the book, the night of the 94 elections was a horrible time. We lost the House and the Senate. The president was devastated, and about 11 o'clock, the president said, Terry, I want to see you upstairs. So he and I went upstairs to the second floor of the White House to the residence, and we went out to the Truman balcony. Had a beer. I hate to keep saying I have all these beers at these things, but I am Irish. I had a cigar, and we sat out on that balcony. And I said, Mr. President, you got to understand, there's an opportunity here. Newt Gingrich will overreach. And that's the night he and I became so close because everybody was so negative. You know, I was so positive. I'm not a half-full glass guy. I'm an overflowing kind of guy. And I talked about that and then went on in the reelection. We won that when nobody thought we could win reelection. He asked me to chair the inauguration. And the one thing I'll never forget, the chairman of the inauguration leads the presidential motorcade down Pennsylvania Ave. You know, hundreds of cars behind you, the president's behind you, all these motorcycle police. And I had my 75-year-old father riding shotgun. You know, my father was a great guy in Syracuse, you know, didn't make a lot of money, was just a great guy. But to have him riding down Pennsylvania Ave in the lead car with his son as chairman, you know, you always like to do things for your parents. My father will never, you know, he passed away on New Year's Eve of 2000, drinking a scotch, watching the Philadelphia Eagles game. But I think that had to be the highlight because my father was so proud that day. Mm.
You have a lot of wonderful stories in this book, I must say. At the beginning, you say, even if you think I'm full of it, I bet I can still make you laugh.
Yep.
So I'm going to put you on the spot a little bit today, and I want you to tell us quickly the story of your encounter with Palestinian leader Yasser Arafat.
I had been over to Israel many times, knew all the Israeli leaders, prime ministers. He came in town and knew I was Bill Clinton's best buddy, and they wanted to do an outreach and establish a relationship with President Clinton. So they invited me to dinner with Chairman Arafat. So I went to dinner, of course, you know, talk issues, love to do it. We went to the prime rib in Washington. I brought my wife, Dorothy. There were six of us. There had to be 500 agents there with M16 assault weapons, a lot of security. But as we're sitting around having dinner, and I was sitting right next to him, every time he would tell a story, he would start rubbing my leg. And this went on for about an hour and a half. Now, I'm from Syracuse, New York. This men normally don't rub my leg. I mean, it's just not what I'm used to. And then we got up after the dinner was over, and he gave me a big wet kiss when I thought he was giving me a handshake. All I could think is, God, what are the nuns at St. Anne's going to think of this? I mean, I don't know if it was a cultural thing or he liked me, but my wife, Dorothy, was laughing through the whole dinner, and I was very, very uncomfortable.
And the story of you and President Clinton in Seoul, South Korea, 1998.
Yeah, it's one of our best. I was an ambassador in 1993 over in Korea. I ran a trade mission for the U.S. government, and the president was over, and I went back with him in 1999, and we went to the state dinner, and the president came out, and he and I rode back to the hotel. And like he and I always do, we set up late playing cards and all that. So I go up to the president's suite, and it's just the two of us. And I stay there until about 5:30 in the morning. Bill Clinton does not sleep. So at about 5:30, I walked out of the suite, and there's all the U.S. Secret Service, and the Korean Secret Service were there. The U.S. Secret Service intercepted a cable that the Koreans had sent to their headquarters, insinuating that the president spent the entire evening in his suite with a good-looking young man, trying to insinuate that the president and I were having an affair together. The U.S. Secret Service got a hold of it, got the cable, informed the Korean Secret Service. No, no, no. Their best friends are playing cards. But when President Clinton heard about it, I saw him the next day. He was still, there were tears coming down his cheeks. He was laughing so hard. So, you know, it is what it is. The book's got all these great stories. I just lay it out. I think you'll have fun reading it.
I'd like to go down the list of Democratic presidential hopefuls for a moment, Terry, and hear your thoughts. First, Barack Obama received extraordinary media attention recently. Has that surprised you?
No, the press, first of all, the press doesn't want Hillary Clinton to walk away with this thing. They're going to build candidates up. I think Barack is the one they're most excited in. There's no question in my mind he should have run. When the brass ring comes around, you got to grab it. And you can't win unless you're on the playing field. So I think it's exciting he's in. I think he will energize a lot of people who will stay active in the general election. We're going to win this election. Hillary will be the nominee. But to have Barack Obama out there campaigning around, getting new people energized, excited is great. So I'm a big, huge fan. I think it's good for Hillary Clinton. I think it's great for the Democratic Party and great for the country.
Is he number two on the ticket in your mind? Is that what you're thinking
he
long-term?
He certainly could be. I mean, you have to, as you know, Jane, they've got to run through this primary process. What a lot of people don't understand is how tough this process is. The one great thing about Hillary Clinton, she knows what she's getting into. I mean, people have no idea if you haven't run for president before what they're going to do to you, say about you. She's been through it. They've said a lot of things about her. She's weathered it all.
Back to Barack Obama for a moment. He's charismatic, obviously very bright.
Yes.
2 years ago, he was an Illinois state legislator.
Right.
Does he have the experience?
That's the question that people are going to have to make up their minds about. Does he have the experience? No matter what happens, the 08 election is still going to be in the prism of 9/11. We're post-9/11 world. Will you keep us safe? Is he tough enough to be president? The good news for Hillary, they think she's tough enough. So, I mean, we checked that box, and that's what he's got to convince the primary voters that, you know, we got to be safe. Before you get to education, health care, and all these other issues that people are concerned about, they still got to believe you're going to keep them safe. And that's what Bush pushed all through 2004.
If Hillary Clinton was not married to a former president of the United States, mm-hmm. would we be discussing her potential as a presidential candidate today?
I think even more so, only in the sense that, you know, she is very bright. She is tough. She loves policy inside and out. I mean, she was, in my mind, always destined for politics. I always knew, and when the first talk of her being a senator, and I talk about this in the book, flying home with her on Air Force One back from a ski vacation in Utah, there was no question. I said, Hillary, you got to go. I mean, once you meet her and you spend time with her, you talk to generals today, and they'll tell you that they sit with all these United States senators. Hillary is always the most prepared.
But out in America, very polarizing figure, Terry. Very polarizing.
Sure.
Is that something you can overcome?
We have to overcome. But my only point is, I don't care who the Democratic nominee is going to be. By the time the Republicans spend $1 billion, I don't care who the nominee is. There's going to be 30 or 40% that just won't vote for the Democratic nominee. She leads all the national polls. Washington Post, ABC on Sunday had her beating McCain, Giuliani. But we need to get her out there because, as I said earlier, they spent a lot of money defining her. She needs to go out and talk for herself. Just look what she did in New York, a landslide victory, and she did it with a lot of Republican folks.
What about John Edwards? Former presidential advisor David Gergen last week said Edwards is the candidate to watch long term.
Yeah, I can see how David would say that. He has been in Iowa almost every weekend since the 2004 election. What John Edwards is hoping to do is have a big win in Iowa and then use that as a springboard. And I think it's a smart strategy for John. He's banked it all on Iowa. We have South Carolina, which is one of the early states. And I think clearly today the top tier is Hillary and Barack and John Edwards. And I agree with him. He is one of the ones to watch, and you got to go back and, you know, people got to figure, will he keep us safe and so forth? But that's the top tier today.
You talk about being safe and security in this country. That seems to be a Republican issue, or has been. Who poses the biggest threat on the Republican ticket?
I still think McCain's the front runner. I think John is out there. The Republic. I think it's our best field we've had in a long time, Jane. No offense to anyone who's ever run. I think this is one of the weakest on the Republican side. I mean, after you get through John McCain, and he's got his issues, but I do respect that he did. You know, he was a 5-year prisoner of war. But, you know, after that, you get to Rudy Giuliani. Well, he's pro-choice. He's pro-gay rights. I mean, how do you win the Republican primary? Do you elect a Mormon from Massachusetts, your governor, former Governor Mitt Romney? He's an attractive candidate, but, I mean, there's issues with all those folks. But I would say today it's still John McCain.
Let's go to the callers, because many people are calling about Hillary on a ticket. George is calling from Pocatello, Idaho. George, you're on the line.
Hi, Jane.
Hello. What's your question for Terry McAuliffe?
I've got some friends that are Republicans, and they're drooling to have Hillary on the ticket. And the view is that she's unelectable. All the polls say that. She seems and appears to be very sort of undecided and wishy-washy on the issues. And that's the view out here.
Terry? Thanks. You hear that over and over again.
Sure, and people keep saying it, and that's why you have to keep responding. It becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy, as they say. But all I can tell you is Washington Post ABC, she had a 54% approval rating. She beat every Democrat in the primary field 3-1. She beat McCain. She beat Giuliani. 36% of Republican women said they would now consider voting for her. But people got to understand, let me say this very quickly, there are 45% of this country are Democrats, 45% Republicans, 10% are the true swing voters. They're mostly women. They are very bright. They watch all three presidential debates, and they make up their mind a week or two before the election. I tell folks, don't tell me today who can win and who can't win, because we don't know, because the people who have to make up their mind haven't even started paying attention to this.
Marianne from Peabody, Massachusetts, has a question for you. Terry, Marianne, hello.
Hi, Jane. Hi, Terry.
Hi, Marianne.
I think Mr. McAuliffe is about a couple of days behind. And has not mentioned the emergence of Chuck Hagel from Nebraska. I'd like to preface my remarks by stating that I am a lifelong Democrat. I have been involved since the age of 16 when I went to work for Gene McCarthy during the Vietnam days. I have been disturbed by the Clintons' continued drift towards the center, trying to appeal to Republicans. I am concerned about Senator Clinton's failure to take a principled position on the Iraq War. Every other senator who voted for it has come forward and stated it was a big mistake. Senator Clinton has not done that. And now Chuck Hagel is talking the kind of talk that I want to hear. And although I've only voted for one Republican ever in my life, and that was for Bill Weld, I just feel that this is such a critical issue. If Senator Hagel continues talking the way he is, he's going to have my interest. I don't know where he stands socially. It's something I will look into. But I'm a lifelong Democrat, and I don't like Hillary Clinton's ambivalence.
Thanks for your call, Marianne. I appreciate it. Let's listen, Terry, for just a moment. Earlier this week, Bill Clinton was asked how he felt about his wife's bid for the presidency.
I'm very proud of my wife. So is her daughter. I wish her well. I'll do whatever I'm asked to do. I can only tell you this. I know her better than anybody on earth, and she's got the best combination of mind and heart, the ability to lead and to learn, to stand fast and to make honorable agreements with people who disagree with her, if anybody I've ever known. The people in New York figured that out, and that's why she got, about 60% of the vote in the 44 counties President Bush carried just a couple of years ago. So I'm really proud of her, and I'm looking forward to that.
Bill Clinton speaking about his wife. In your book, Terry, you describe Hillary Clinton as a world-class worrier when it comes to money.
Yeah. Actually, Bill Clinton's comments there were at my book party in New York on Monday. But yeah, during the campaign, I mean, she's a middle-class girl from middle-class America. She says that, and she worries more than her husband does.
Well, she announced recently, or just this week, that she would not be receiving federal funds. So what does that mean for the rest of the Democratic hopefuls, do you think?
Well, listen, we made the decision first and foremost. We're not going to take taxpayers' money to run our campaign for president. Let you keep your tax dollars. We can raise it. We don't need the money. And so we decided that we're going to forego all federal matching funds, and we're going to make the decision ourselves, and that we're going to raise our money, and we're going to go forward that way. And I think it's a smart decision for us. Why use the federal taxpayer money when we have the ability to convince people to give us money? I think it's smart. I hope other candidates do it as well.
Let me turn for a moment to your days back as the DNC mm-hmm. chairman and look at what's happening at the Democratic National Committee now. The chairman of the DNC is, of course, Howard Dean. And I'd like you for a moment to contrast your leadership to his.
Well, we're two totally different individuals, I think, as all party chairmen were. When I went in, my job, and I said, was to rebuild our party. As you know, we were $18 million in debt. We had no headquarters to speak of. We had no TV, no radio facilities. Believe it or not, Jane, we did not have a voter file at the Democratic National Committee, not one list of one voter. And we only had 400,000 direct mail donors, average age 65 years old. It was a disgrace. It was a decrepit old party. I said, we're going to fix it. And we embarked upon a massive rebuilding of our party to the point that new headquarters, new TV facilities, radio facilities, all paid for in cash. We now have 178 million name voter file that we built while I was there that we can now use. We have millions of small donors that we didn't have before. And when I handed the party over to Howard, I gave him a DNC with millions of dollars in the bank, no debt for the first time ever for a party chairman to inherit, new headquarters. And I told Howard, first of all, you're about to become a human fire hydrant. That's just what happens with a DNC job. But that the National Party, for the first time in its history, is fixed financially. Now you need to go focus on the state parties and build up the state organizations. I didn't have time to do all of that. I had to do the National Party.
You know the difference between the Democrats and Republicans in that venue, that Democrats have always struggled to master the details. Is that the key to success?
Well, we were always in debt, so we couldn't do what we need to do to go out and get our message out and to talk to voters. I mean, we never were able to do it. Now we can do that. That's the opportunity that we now have as a party. And Howard's going out doing the state parties, which, you know, is very important. And that's what we need to do going forward. And we need to fix the state parties. But, you know, we're in great shape. The DNC is in the best shape it's ever been. And I'll tell you this. Howard Dean says this in every speech he gives. I'm building on the foundation that Terry McAuliffe built. Doesn't have to do it. It's very nice. He actually sent out an email to every DNC person, buy Terry's book. It gives the whole history of rebuilding the party. My website, whataparty.us, go to that and you can hear it. But
you are a salesman, Terry.
I am. I love it. I'm sorry.
Let me go to the callers again. Sarah's coming in from Providence, Rhode Island. Sarah, what's your question for Terry McAuliffe?
Hi. Well, two things. You know, you were talking about experience. If the Democrats went after George Bush when he ran the way they went after John Kerry, he would have been laughed out of the race. I mean, talk about experience. I don't even see how that can be an issue for Democrats running in this presidential election. But my question is, it seems to me, and I'm sort of between sad and angry, that all these Democrats and Republicans are so much more concerned about their reputation and, you know, getting reelected. So it seems they're afraid to take action on really difficult issues, and they might even be unpopular. Maybe they won't get reelected. You know, they might not have a job. But I want them to be there to take action and to be tough and to have a spine. So it's so frustrating.
What about that, Terry?
I couldn't agree with her more. I make this point in the book. I would like a politician who never hires never does a focus group and never hires a pollster, and just goes out there and says, here's what I believe, and let the chips fall where they may. I agree with her. She's right. Too many people worry about reelection. You know what? Life is short. I think you get this through this book. Just go do it. And you know what? In the worst case, if you lose, it's not the end of the world. Get out of bed the next day and go do something else. But she's right. There's too much slicing and dicing, and how do we get this voter and that voter? The heck with it. Just wing it. Say what you believe, and I think you'll be very successful doing it. And that's what I'm talking to Hillary. She wants to have fun, uplifting. Hillary, just go do it. Tell us where you want to take the country.
Carl is calling from Amherst, Massachusetts, with a much different perspective. Carl, you're on the air.
Hi, Jane. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
You asked earlier how we felt about John Kerry not running, and I have to say I'm relieved. If he had been, it would have been heartbreaking. I think the man would make a wonderful president. He's thoughtful and intelligent, but he would make a terrible candidate at this point. And I think that's something that he's done to himself in the last election and in the time between. And I'm wondering if you can talk about the difference between what makes a good candidate and what would make a good president.
Good question.
Yeah, very good question. And I think a lot goes to Al Gore, too, because, you know, Al Gore hated campaigning. Al Gore was the greatest vice president we ever had, and he would have been a spectacular president of the United States. And I'm still heartbroken over that 2000 race. You may not necessarily, you could be a great campaigner. It doesn't mean you're going to be a great president. And I think it does go back to our earlier point about passion and commitment. What do you believe? And I think for John, for a lot of the voters, you know, I voted for the $87 billion before I didn't, was confusing to so many people because they didn't see that conviction. And when I saw a poll in the 04 election that 66% of the voters would rather have a beer, even though he doesn't drink, I'd rather have a beer with George Bush than John Kerry, I knew we were in trouble because likability is a big piece of the business in order to get elected, which isn't necessarily means you're going to be a great president.
Let's listen to John Kerry announce on Wednesday, this last Wednesday, that he will not run for president in 08.
There are powerful reasons to want to continue that fight now. But I've concluded this isn't the time for me to mount a presidential campaign.
Not a good candidate, John Kerry, in your opinion.
No, I don't think he'll be the first to tell you he made a lot of mistakes. John doesn't run from the 2004 campaign. He admits that he made a lot of mistakes. This is a hard business. And, you know, you get in this thing, you haven't done it before. But I think being timid was the hardest thing. They wanted to do what I call the slicing and dicing, didn't want to offend people. The idea, Jane, that at the Democratic convention we could not use George Bush's name, to me, is symptomatic of the problem. Why do you want to be president? Because George Bush has failed on the following issues, and here's what I can do. Voters want to hear that. And I just think John had a very tough time with that. The guy's wanted to be the president his whole life. And listen, this was a hard decision for him. I feel for him. This is not easy.
Brian is calling from Boston. Let's get another caller in. Brian, you're on the air with Terry McAuliffe.
Hello. How you doing? Thanks for taking my call. I'd first like to say that just to voice my disappointment in Hillary Clinton's role with the Iraq War, kind of authorizing it and then going, you know, and not really going back and regretting it. But just the idea of when, you know, the politicians who authorized the Iraq War saying that they thought, oh, it maybe would be fought in a different way. I feel that that's a real cop-out because they knew the way that George Bush and especially Dick Cheney and the way that that party does politics. They were more aware of how they do things than the American public, and they made a decision to authorize them to do what they did. So, you know, that sort of being able to see in the future and make a good judgment, you give someone power that you can really entrust in, something that's really important in a politician. And I feel that Barack Obama's take on it, where he really did, you know, take a stand and did not authorize the war and was against it from the start, I think that shows a certain intuition and a freshness, someone who can trust their instincts. And not feel that they have to, you know, kind of sway to where the party's going or where their fellow politicians are going. So I feel that that fresh face is really, really important.
Brian, thanks for your call. I appreciate it. Is Hillary's stand on the war going to help her or going to hurt her in the primary?
Well, I think it's something that she has to deal with. Brian makes a valid point. Listen, I was Bush's harshest critic for 4 years. I never believed the man was up to the job of being president. And I think he misled us from day one. I always said it. Hillary and other Democratic senators voted, what they will tell you, to vote to give the president the authority so that they could go over and negotiate with Saddam Hussein and let the weapons instructors. Bush misled him. And I agree with Brian. You shouldn't have believed George Bush. Bush misled him, and shame on the press as well.
I question, having seen many of the senators in Washington this week with this non-binding resolution as it related to Iraq, what is the role of the Democratic Party leaders on Capitol Hill, Terry, leading up to the 08 election?
Oh, we can't be successful in 08 unless we're successful in the Congress through 2007, 2008. If you go back to the midterm elections, you know, we had great candidates and money and all that, but let's be very clear. They lost it more than we won it. I mean, they had the Abramoff scandal. They had Iraq. They had the Foley pedophile scandal. They had members of Congress going to prison. I mean, you could not have asked for a worse set, 23% approval rating for Republicans in Congress. So we reluctantly now have the keys. And they want to see us produce. They want to see results. And I think Nancy Pelosi and Harry Reid are going to do that. But let me tell you, the leaders in Congress are absolutely critical because I think there are a lot of what you call Reagan Democrats and others who left the party who, if they see that we're actually doing something on health care and education and these other issues, I think will come back to the party and support us. So they're absolutely critical. If we don't have a good legislative agenda and we go into the 08 campaign, I think the Republicans will use that and they'll have money and do their negative campaign tactics, and we'll pay a real price for that.
You talk a lot in your book, Terry, about Bill and Hillary Clinton and your relationship with them, your friendship with them. Mm-hmm. No secret, you are dear friends with them. You've called them here today your best friends. Mm-hmm. You guaranteed the loan on their home mm-hmm. in Chappaqua when they were $10 million in debt from legal fees. You quote Bill Clinton in your book as saying, "Every time I was down in my life when I was president, every single time Terry was there."
Right. And, so, yeah, he says that all the time. And
how would you describe your relationship with him?
I think we're very similar personalities. We're both kids from, you know, little cities and who grew up, and neither he nor I thought we'd have the experience that we have. We love life. If we could go 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, we both would do it. We always try to see the optimistic, positive side in things. I mean, as I say, Jane, I mean, for me to be sitting here with this book talking about my experience, I mean, I was a kid from Syracuse, and you look what, I mean, I've been lucky. I got lucky in business. I've had the time of my life in politics. I just pinch myself. I want other people to have those opportunities I had. And that's how Bill Clinton feels. Bill Clinton loves fighters. So does Hillary. I mean, the press, when you go at the level I do, they want to knock you down, which is fine. Yeah, I know that going into this business. But they want to see if you can get back up again, dust yourself off, and get back in that arena. And that's when the president was always down. I was always there for him because he had done so many great things. Yes, he'd made mistakes, but boy, he had done so many great things. He left office, I will say, Jane, with the highest approval rating of any president in modern history, 66%. Reagan was 65.
You talk about some of Bill Clinton's down moments, and I'd like for you to recount for us the family vacation you spent with Bill and Hillary Clinton in Utah after the impeachment vote.
Yeah.
What happened?
And I thought it was important. I thought if this book was to have credibility, I had to talk about the good and the bad. So I talk about it. And this was right during the impeachment. And it was a very difficult time for the family and for everybody. And they went out skiing in Utah. And I was invited along, the president and Hillary and Chelsea and myself. And we'd sit down and have dinner. And, you know, I was sort of there, I think, to keep the conversation going because not a lot of people were talking to a lot of people. But I described the scene after dinner. We went into the TV room, and Hillary has the television changer, and four of us are sitting there, and she starts changing channels, and every channel, guess what they're talking about? And we go through about 30 channels. Now, this is a little awkward. How would you like to be sitting there, Jane? And I say after like 36 channels of them attacking her husband and father, we decided to watch ESPN. That was the only safe network. But, you know, listen, they had a tough time. Many different marriages have gone through tough times, and the president, you know, he and I never talked about it till it was all over. And he finally asked me, and I said, "Mr. President, horrible thing, no question. He went through a personal hell." I mean, he talks about that. But you know what? I'm an Irish Catholic. You got to, you know, I believe in forgiveness. That's what my religion is all about. I got to look at him in the totality. And he did a lot of great things for a lot of people around the world. And you know what? Today, he's the most popular man in the world today.
Let's take a call from Rhode Island. Tom is calling. Tom, you're on the air.
Oh, hi, Jane. Hi, Terry.
Hi, Tom.
I'm a lifelong Democrat. I'm a union member, a union executive committee. And I voted for Bill Clinton twice. I thought he was a political genius, but I was sorely disappointed by his behavior. And I'm frankly just, I've had it with the Clinton family psychodrama because there is no guarantee that something like this isn't going to happen again. I think they have a strange dynamic. I've kind of, as I said, he just gravely upset me at the time, upset my children were upset by the situation, and I've had it with them. I think they're better faces. I think it's too slick of an operation. I think it's time to move on and move away from the Clintons.
Too many memories.
Too much baggage. I think he was great, but he put a loaded gun in his worst political enemy's hands with the Monica Lewinsky thing, and I think it's a deep flaw in his character, and I think whatever the relationship is, that's their business. But I don't want it to make it the nation's business again. I think it's time to move on, move away, and get ahead of them.
A lot of people feel that way, Terry?
Listen, Tom's got every right to say that. I look at the Clinton administration, greatest economic prosperity piece around the world. I do remind you, you know, he was horrible, said that. But Republicans overreached in the public. You know, I want to give credit to the public. In 1998, after it was over, for the first time in modern history, the Democrats actually picked up seats in the Congress because the American public said enough. So they stood up for Bill Clinton, as Nelson Mandela and so many other people did. But, you know, it's not going to happen again. But if Tom can't get over that, you know, he's got every right to vote the way he does, and that's his decision. But I can promise you we had 8 great years with Bill Clinton. You would have 8 great years of this country with, of course, Hillary Clinton. But, you know,
let me take another call.
I would just say, please read the book. Just do me a favor. Spend the $20 and see the Clinton family from an insider's point of view, and, you know, keep an open mind is all I can ask you.
Chaz is calling from Virginia. Chaz, you're on the air.
Yeah, I don't see myself voting for Hillary Clinton because I don't believe that she can defeat any of the Republican candidates. I don't believe she can win any of the southern states, and I think that my perspective is a microcosm of what she's going to be confronted with throughout her candidacy, and that is, how can she navigate through the primary season without alienating African-American voters with respect to Senator Obama? I took note the other day when she was interviewed on national television. She would not state that Senator Obama was qualified. She navigated it and stepped around it and basically said that's up to the American people to decide. So I'm going to be watching her very, very, very closely in terms of how she navigates Senator Obama, who I support, but at the same time, even if he wasn't in the mix, that being Senator Obama, I do not think that you can win the presidency of the United States by writing off half of the country, particularly the southern states. And I don't see her as a Virginian winning any of the southern states. And it's for that reason that I would like to see anyone but Senator Clinton win the primary.
Thanks so much, Chaz. Terry McAuliffe?
Yeah, well, I think we win southern states. I think we can win Florida, Louisiana. Clearly we can win Arkansas. Virginia has become a Democratic state. I've invested a lot of time and money in that state. Tim Kaine is the new Democratic governor. Mark Warner was the governor before because of Northern Virginia is really trending Democratic. I'm not going to take anything off the table. We needed to win 60,000 more votes in Ohio. I clearly think Hillary Clinton will get us those. I think she'll do very well in some of these new western states that are now aligning with us, New Mexico and Arizona. She has strong support. As you just saw the poll of the African-American community, she had a support of 75% of the African-American community. Barack had 20%.
Long way to go.
Yeah.
You know, you mentioned Ohio. Tell the story, if you would, of John Kerry during the campaign and the $15 million that was left over at the end of the race.
And this is a hard one, and I've asked John for explanation. I've never really gotten it. When you go through the book, you'll see that, you know, we had raised the DNC, had outraised the RNC. We had everybody out in the field, more field. It was great. I even went in, though, that last weekend and borrowed $10 more million from the bank just for a little extra money because I thought it was so important. And we actually asked the Kerry campaign if they could sponsor some different activities, get out the vote in Ohio, and they said they were broke. Okay, that's fine. They were out of money. We then find out after the campaign that they were sitting on over $15 million. Why, Jane, you would leave one penny in the bank when you're running for president of the United States? If you given me that $15 million, I would have loaded up a steamer trunk. I would have driven to Ohio. I would have got us those 60,000 votes.
Would have made the difference in Ohio.
There's no question. $15 million on radio, TV, grassroots, you know, going door to door, handing out the pamphlets, making the phone calls. You would have, for $15 million, I could have got you probably 800,000 votes.
Rio is calling from Chesapeake, Virginia for Terry McAuliffe. Rio, you're on the air.
Hello, Jane.
Hello.
On a lighter note, I'd just like to say hello to my high school class president from Bishop Ludden High School.
Wow, very good.
New York. Terry, it's great to hear your voice.
Rio, great to talk to you, man. Here's going back a long time.
Yes, sir. Jane, for your listeners that don't know Terry personally, back in high school, Terry was the high school president.
And what was he like in school, Rio?
Terry was a go-getter. He used to pump hands in the hall and with his big smile. And, of course, we all voted for him.
Yeah,
and we knew then that he had what it takes to be involved in politics and be successful. So, Terry, congratulations on your great success.
Thank you, Rio. And as you know, on that student council election, I had the highest, luckily got the highest vote tally ever, and it's never been beaten thanks to people like Rio. So thank you.
Great to hear your voice.
Great.
You are one of a kind. Chris calling from Boston, Massachusetts. Chris, you're on the air.
Hi, guys.
Hey.
I was wondering, do you think there's a possibility of a third-party candidate making any moves in this next election?
I'm thinking
specifically of Congressman Ron Paul, who has a lot of internet buzz. He'd be running as a Republican, but he's more associated with the Libertarian Party.
It's a good question. I do think I'll make a prediction here. I bet you Michael Bloomberg runs the mayor of New York City. I think he'll run as an independent. I know he's talking to people. So I think it's a good question. I don't know about Ron Paul, but, you know, it was interesting. Michael Bloomberg was bidding on the 2008 convention. All of a sudden, he pulled out of that. And my guesstimate is he decided that he wasn't going to host the Democratic convention because he himself would like to run. So there's yes, I think there's a good chance, Chris, and it's a good question. And that dynamic, as you know, changes everything up. But I think there's a good chance Michael Bloomberg could run.
The book is called What a Party, My Life Among Democrats, Presidents, Candidates, Donors, Activists, Alligators, and Other Wild Animals. How'd you get that title, Terry?
Well, What a Party is sort of my life. I believe that has always been my life. But What a Party, it means everything, you know, good, bad, indifferent. And I came up with the title underneath because in 1980, I was challenged to wrestle an alligator for $15,000 for the Carter campaign. I was down at the Seminole Indian Tribe in Florida. And I said, sure, you know, okay, it'll be drugged and toothless, no big deal. Well, my big mouth got me in trouble. And the day of the event, hundreds of people showed up, paid admission, the press came, Newsweek, Time. Well, we couldn't do a fraud show, so I was given the choice. You either do it with the alligator, like they do it. Every third Saturday they did it, a real wrestling match, or we'd call the event off. So I decided, let's go ahead and do it. So I got in the pit with Jumper, who was 9 feet long, weighed about 265 pounds with 3 minutes, and wrestled him and actually got the $15,000. So that's where the alligators and the other wild animals is just all the people you run into in politics. You know, it brings out quite an interesting collection of folks.
Mike is calling from Buffalo, New York. Mike, your question for Terry McAuliffe.
Hi, Terry.
Hi, Mike.
I'm a supporter of Hillary, and I live in New York, in Buffalo, and I've seen all the anger and animosity that's been directed at Hillary. Even though she's won New York, I'm afraid of all that anger, and I know that the lowest common denominator for people on TV are places like Fox and, you know, pretty conservative right wing, and I don't think she's going to be able to overcome that, even though she makes an admirable candidate, and I'm just afraid of all that anger that's out there.
Yeah.
Thank you, and I'll take your answer off the air.
Yeah, and this is the challenge that we have to deal with. I mean, she's probably the most visible name in American politics. She doesn't need a last name. She's one of those people who, you know, can go by one name, Hillary, Madonna. I mean, there's a couple people who, you know, don't need the last name. And with that has come, you know, people have said all kinds of things. And why is it that so many people have talked about her and all that? For one, Republicans are scared of the woman. I say in my book, you know, my mother used to call me, 82 years old from Syracuse, and say, oh, Terry, that Rush Limbaugh attacked you again today. And I'd say to my mother, Mom, you understand, if he's not attacking me, then I'm not being effective. Well, it's hard to explain to a mother that rationale. But the same thing with Hillary. She has, you know, a lot of people have come after her because she is so powerful. She
know, the,
is engaging,
the other thing, too,
funny.
About Hillary is when you meet her, and many reporters have talked about this,
right.
She's very different in person than she is on television.
Yeah.
I've interviewed her myself and noticed the difference.
Yeah.
And how do you overcome that?
Well, the Hillary that you see in the smaller settings is what we got to get people to know her in the larger settings. And it's hard when you got huge. It's hard for Hillary when she travels. She still has Secret Service. Wherever she goes, there are 100 cameras pointing in her face, and it makes it very hard. But we've got to be able to connect with people, connect on an eye-to-eye basis, and that's what she's going to have to do in these small states like Iowa and New Hampshire.
Kelly is calling from Boston. Kelly, you're on the air with Terry McAuliffe.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I'm just concerned with the fact that a lot of men have been on the air just saying, oh, Hillary can't do it, Hillary can't do it. And I wonder how much of that is just because she's a woman, because I think she can do it. And she's a very intelligent, strong, politically minded person who has strong visions for our country and is a wonderful mother, raised a wonderful daughter. And I think it's time to get a woman in office. And I think I'm just sick of hearing these men say she can't do it, because I know she can.
Thank you, Kelly. I've been waiting for you all morning. But
so Terry, what is the schedule now for you? Obviously, you've spent a lot of time here talking about Hillary Clinton. You're on the campaign trail with her now. You know, where do you go from here?
Well, I'm on a 25-city tour. The book came out this week. I'm happy to say it was number one in Barnes & Noble this week, which I was pretty excited about. I have everybody reading the book saying, you know, one of the funniest books I've ever read. I even had crazy Bill O'Reilly the other night pumping the book, said it was a great political book. So I'll continue to go out and travel around, finish up the book tour, do the book signings. I'm all over the country. Whataparty.us is my website if you want to see where I'm going for book signings and all that. And then I'll go full-time for Hillary. I'll then immediately flip over into the Clinton for President campaign committee. I'll give it all I got. She is my friend. I love her. I'm loyal. And I'm going to fight to my last breath to help her get elected president. And if somehow she doesn't win, I'll fight for whoever the Democratic nominee is.
This hour we've been speaking with What a Party, Terry McAuliffe. My Life Among Democrats, Presidents, Candidates, Donors, Activists, Alligators, and Other Wild Animals. Terry, it's nice to see you.
Thank you, Jane.
Thank you very much.
Great to be with you.
I'm Jane Clayson, in for Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point.